Out here, if you're doing nothing, you're doing everything right. Though on a cruise with Norwegian, even if you're doing nothing, you're still basking in the warm sun, enjoying the peaceful ocean waves, you're breathing. Don't forget about breathing. Definitely need to be breathing. So you get to do nothing or everything, but you still need to be breathing. It's like really important.
Experience the difference with cruises to Alaska, the Caribbean, and Europe. Norwegian Cruise Line. It's different out here. Visit NCL.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Norwegian Cruise Line ships registry, the Bahamas and USA.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. I am one of your hosts, Ethan Sachs, and I'm not joined by Ben Wernie this time around. I am joined by my two teammates from the Team Sealed event at Shoebox in Minneapolis this weekend. Sitting next to me is Charlie Schaefer, and on the other call is the one and only Sam Pratt from Rough Drafts. And we'll get into a little bit. You might be thinking to yourself already, especially if you're watching on YouTube, you might be thinking, if it's a team event, why are they all not sitting in the same room at the tournament? We'll get to that in just a little bit. But to kick things off, Charlie and Sam, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah. This is an event that we were looking forward to for a really long time. It got announced, I don't know, in the fall or whatever. And I think we pretty quickly, you know, after realized, like, Ben couldn't make it. And so I quickly was like, okay, who are the best? And more importantly, and we'll talk about this, I think, in a little bit as we're outlining Team Sealed, like, more importantly, the vibes of the people you're with, I think, really matter a lot. And so it's like, yes, I would like the people I'm with to be good at Magic, but I mostly would like them to be fun to sit next to for an entire day of, you know, high stakes gameplay. We're going to get into sort of a rundown of what this tournament was. We're also going to get into a rundown of Team Sealed in general, and then we'll talk about our specific prep for Lorwyn Eclipsed Team Sealed, our experience there, and then do a little tourney report like that. Let's talk about the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. Two great perks via the Patreon, which is our Discord, which is just a great community of like-minded limited individuals. It's always great at these kinds of events. And this is a small event, you know, nowhere near the size of a Magic Con like we usually travel to, but a really amazing community of people. And even here, it's just great to like have people come up and be like, hey, love the podcast. And also great to meet, to put faces to names of people in the Discord. So that is one of the things I really appreciate about this. And just one of the things I really appreciate about our community of folks in the Discord. So if that sounds like something that is of interest to you, you can head on over to the Patreon for that. You can also head on over to the Patreon for our podcast feed, where you get not only this episode a day early ad free, but also access to our weekly bonus episode of Lords Unlimited. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page. And then we, of course, want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they joined. So this week we are welcoming Visa. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support. Now.
Couldn't say thank you enough.
There it is. He knows.
I was going to say that too. One.
Ben, if you're listening, you're cut. You're done. I have two replacements on lock. Jokes. Okay. Who wants to do a little quick rundown of what Shoebox is, what this tournament was?
Yeah, I could talk a little bit about that. So Shoebox is, it's kind of like a Magic Con, but it was way more focused on grassroots formats. So obviously Team Sealed was one of the things. There's like the biggest event of the whole weekend was the Cube event, which I think they were doing some obscene number of Cube drafts over the weekend with a little bit of a tournament structure there, sort of similar to KubeCon. I know that today they're running a Pauper tournament. There's all kinds of, there was like a space called the Carnival where people were running stuff like Momir with a printer. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
We should, yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of like artists there, people altering cards. It's just a really, really cool, it was a really, really cool event. I, as you can see, I'm not in Minnesota anymore, but I really wish I had more time to spend there because it seemed like there was a lot going on that was very cool.
Yes. Yeah. So kudos to the organizers for just like a massive success as far as I'm concerned from the like experience standpoint. I wonder how they feel, because I would say like it felt like the turnout was a little sparse, a little small. And I think that might have been combo of the happenings in this city and the surrounding city over the past few months. And I think also a combo of maybe some weather and also a combo of just like hard to get the word out. So I'm unclear about what their perspective is, but I hope that it was positive enough that they try and do this again, because I'm sure that the word of mouth from attendees will be extremely positive.
Yeah, my car mates and I were talking, we're like locking this in as soon as they announce the next one.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought the whole thing was incredibly well run, like especially the Team Sealed event that we did. Like the judges did a great job. Like it felt really well organized. It felt incredibly like welcoming. Like it was just a really amazing experience, and was better than some of the Magic Cons that I've been to as far as like being in that environment, like with all the people in the convention hall. Like I just enjoyed myself being there.
Yeah, the Team Sealed event was the only thing that I have done in that convention hall with any sort of like sanction to it. And it was small. We'll talk about that. There were only 22 teams that were playing in the event, which is, pretty small for a main event of a tournament like this. But it was so smooth. And I'm sure it only being 22 teams with that ratio of people to judges made that a little bit easier for them to manage. But even so, like, I'm sure that's an easy thing to mess up or get unwieldy or, oh, things went to time or, oh, we have to repair. But I think the combo of the level of professionalism and knowledge of the players and the judging staff and the staff at large at the tournament hall, I think just made it feel so smooth. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about Team Sealed in general. As I said, this is a format that is going to be happening at Spotlight Vegas later in the summer. So for people traveling to that, I think this will be a good primer. And a lot of the things that we'll talk about with Lorwyn Eclipsed specifically, I think will translate to, other formats. I'd be curious to also hear about like Sealed. I know Charlie sitting next to me here is a big Sealed aficionado. And I think that there are things to be learned from Sealed to Team Sealed. Like a thing I'm going to talk about, which is like a domino effect of if this is true in your pool, then that means this, then that means this. And I think Lorwyn Eclipsed sort of highlights a lot of that. But before we get into the nitty gritty of building the decks or whatever, Charlie, can you give us a rundown of like how Team Sealed works?
Yeah. So in Team Sealed, unlike, normal traditions, you get your 6 packs, you build your 1 deck out of, you get 12 packs for Team Sealed. And that is a shared pool that the three team members have to then build 3 decks out of. So from your 12 packs, you build your decks, and they tend to end up being, because of the large card pool, you tend to get pretty high quality decks, really high power level. But you build your decks, and then after you build your decks, you also then have to divide up the rest of the cards that aren't utilized, and those become your sideboards, but they are assigned. So like Sam, Ethan, and I, we each had our, after we built our decks, we then had to divvy up the sideboard cards and say, okay, you're going to get this, you're going to get that. What holes or gaps do we have in our decks? Where do we want to fill them? Then you register all of that. So you register your deck plus your sideboard individually.
So then when you play your matches, you sit down and you assign prior when you're, setting your decks, you assign each player a letter, A, B, and C. And you sit down in that order. So you face off against the opposing team. A plays A, B plays B, C plays C. And you're playing your normal 1v1 match of Magic, your normal best-of-3 match of Magic. The twist, or like the fun of Team Sealed, is that your whole team's record is what matters. And so you're playing a best-of-3 match, but it is then best 2 out of 3 of the entire team's match record that decides the round. So for example, just off the top, if I were to lose my match and Charlie and Sam were to win their matches, we as a team would still emerge victorious. And this is one of the things I was reflecting on yesterday, just after the event, is that there's nothing like Team Sealed. Because even playing, or a team event in general, because Magic at tournaments, I feel like you often are traveling with a group. Like, mm-hmm. I would see Charlie and Sam and Ben and the other guys that we're hanging out with at a Magic Con playing in the PTQ or whatever. but you're still, there's this squirreliness around like, oh, how was your round? And you feel a little sheepish when you're 3-0, but your friend is 1-2. Or like, you want to talk about your bad beat, but your friend doesn't want to hear about your bad beat or whatever. And all of that is washed out in Team Sealed because you are sharing victories with two other people. You are sharing losses with two other people. And the best part is that sometimes you get both. You get to feel the loss, but still get the win because your teammates won. Or the reverse can happen. You get to win your game, but your teammates lost, but you still get to feel good because you won your match. Whatever. Like, there's...
Or you don't have to feel bad that you're like... It takes the whole team to lose the match, too. It's like, it wasn't my fault, like, 100% either. It's
correct. Like... And I guess the other thing we should say about Team Sealed is you're sitting next to your team, and so you can give input mm-hmm. on what the other players are doing. So keeper mulls are very easy decisions to sort of be like, hey, can I get a second opinion on this? And then obviously you get to check in on board states or check in on decisions of sequencing or remind your friend to not miss a trigger or whatever, like stuff that you wouldn't get to do normally in a 1v1 match of Magic because it is such a, you know, you're just looking out for number one type deal.
When you're sharing these decisions like keeper mole, if you finish your match, also you can go like crouch behind your teammates and just sort mm-hmm. of backseat them, if you will. Also like if your teammates finish their two matches and both win, you just don't have to play the third match, just a couple other details. So
right.
I actually felt like the rounds were finishing pretty quickly. I think they went to time, but like not too far over time except for one round. So it's a really, really fun format that I think doesn't probably saw some amount of play like pre-pandemic when there were more GPs and stuff. But
yeah,
I'd love like more opportunities to play team events like this. It's so much fun.
Well, and that's one of the reasons I like wanted to jump on Shoebox, because I was like, when was the last time we had this? I mean, Charlie and I feel like did play in the actual last one of these, like in 2022. Yeah. There was an SCG Con in Pittsburgh that mm-hmm. was Team Sealed for New Capenna. And I'm not sure if there's been one since then. And so I was really excited to do this. And then even more excited that there's going to be a Spotlight series, because I feel like there's going to be really good turnout for that. And that just means we're going to get more of these in years to come. So really good to just have a primer and an opportunity to talk about this. And while, yes, this will be Lorwyn Eclipsed specific, I do think there's just going to be a lot to extrapolate in terms of, as I talked about, the domino effect. The one other thing I want to say, which I think we was a hangover from when we did Team Sealed the last time, was this idea of making sure that everybody looks at all the decks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just by the mechanics of you open the 12 packs, you're sorting it, and sort of while you're doing deck registration, everybody's brain is working of like, oh, I'm seeing that we have all these white rares, or I'm seeing we have two deep channel duelists and two eclipsed marrows, so there's probably a merfolk deck in here. Essentially, it becomes after you have your hour for deck building, you just go like, all right, who wants to build elves? Who wants to build merfolk? Who wants to see what the red deck looks like or whatever? And it is very easy from that standpoint to just decide. I even heard the team next to us in registration did this exact same thing. You're sitting with this deck in front of you for 45 minutes, and then all of a sudden you're like, so I guess we're all just playing these decks? And that, I think, is a really bad spot to put yourself in. So I think it's very important to make sure that everybody sits in front of every deck. Because just getting the other line of sight of like, I'm very high on Stratosaur. And so I sat down in front of the Elementals deck and I was like, we got to play some Stratosaurs here. And you just get that sort of buy-in or that sort of feedback from someone. If you're like, oh, I'm not that high on that card. Wildvine Pummeler, the 6/5 vivid payoff at common, not a card that I'm super high on. Sam was like, you should be playing this in your deck if we're doing vivid stuff. Ended up, he was right. So like stuff like that, that you don't get if you're not really making sure every single player sees every deck and is like, okay, I got it to 20 cards. Which of these 7 should be the last 3 or whatever? So I just do think it's important to get everybody's point of view on every deck. And if someone has a preference, like I was like, if there's a Goblins deck in our pool, which sadly, there wasn't. I was like, I would like to play that. But other than that, I don't think any of us had any strong preferences. But if we did, if it was like, hey, I really want to play that, I think you, Sam, were probably inclined towards Elementals.
Yeah, I really wanted to play the red Elementals deck. That's like exactly what I want to be.
And I think like the vibes part of it was nice with this group, because I think no one had any sort of strong, like, I definitely don't want or definitely do want that. But all of us felt like, I'll be comfortable with whatever. And for if sure. someone felt an inclination or a proclivity towards something, all the better to be like, great, then you take that because you're excited for it. And that's going to be better for us. So in terms of our prep, we hopped on a call last week.
Yeah.
And went on DraftMancer. And I think I mentioned this on the show last week, too, after we did it, that I didn't even know this was an option. But DraftMancer has a really great team sealed builder where everybody gets to look at the same pool and then can grab cards themselves to be like, mm-hmm. ooh, okay, I'm going to build elves. So I'll start dragging all the elves cards down to my view. And we were sharing screens. So it was sort of effectively mimicking what we were going to do in paper, which is, hey, I'm going to take this group of cards and or, you know, and then as we're doing it, you're like, oh, actually, could I have the Gathering Stone? And so then you throw the Gathering Stone up to be a communal card. And then Sam grabs the Gathering Stone, whatever. Some big picture things for Lorwyn Eclipsed that emerged. 100% of the pools that we looked at had an elf. I think we eventually actually towards the end of the day at the top tables, we're finally finding decks that didn't have or pools where they weren't playing elves. But the reason they weren't playing elves was because their other three decks were absolutely cracked.
Yeah.
So I think the default is you're probably going to play elves in Lorwyn Eclipsed Team Sealed. And I would say probably about 75% of the time you had a Merfolk deck also.
And then the
like,
other.
Those felt like the clear, like you're definitely going to build elves. You're probably going to build Merfolk. And then what is the third deck was the big question. And that, I think, is the real juice to squeeze in ECL Team Sealed. But also, that domino effect, I think, is present in all Team Sealed formats or even Sealed. Like, that's why I wanted to ask you, Charlie, about Sealed in general. I mm-hmm. feel like there are domino effects of Sealed when I open a pool and I'm like, okay, well, I have four black rares. Like, I gotta really try hard to play black. So mm-hmm. if I'm really trying hard to play black, but black has no two drops. So what color gives me the best two drops? It's this color. Okay. Like those sort of like if then statements of sealed,
yeah.
I think is what makes you like find the direction of where you're supposed to go. Is that your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I feel like in general sealed, right? The thing is always sort by rarity first or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, look at your rares, where are your most powerful cards, right? And then like, sometimes go to mana fixing. Can you play those? Like, how splashy can you be? Things like that. But absolutely, as you move through a pool, that's, I feel like, what's guiding me through all of my decisions to try to figure out what my final build is a lot of those if-then statements. If I want to play all these rares or here's where my power is, you know, yeah, then what can support that? Where's the curve? The fixing, can I splash? All those kind of things, like, and moving through that. And I think that's very true in the Team Sealed. I mean, as you just said, yeah. like it is so true in the Team Sealed because there's so many, you know, domino decisions that come up when you're just building a sealed pool in general. So
yeah. And Sam, did you find like, and anything else that stuck out to you or anything else you were like, I want to make sure I look out for this when we were, you know, doing our six practice pools or going into yesterday's actual build?
One thing that was really clear to me after seeing a couple pools was it's going to be really obvious if there's a Goblins deck or not.
Yes.
Like, you could just like rule that out immediately in like most pools. Like, I think you need like multiple of the uncommons and several rares. So that was really easy to check off. And then I found a lot of times for the, because most of the time you're building elves, most of the time you're building merfolk, but sometimes it's kithkin. It's like a mm-hmm. white base thing. It's pretty easy to figure out what the strong typal decks are in Lorwyn in your pool, because you could just look at the rares and uncommons. Like, those decks all revolve around like, did you get multiple deep channel duelists? Did you get multiple thought weft imbuers? Like, how are your elf rares? Do you have like a gloom ripper and a marlin? So it's pretty easy to figure out 2/3 of the decks in this format, I think, in most pools. We'll see that like in our pool, that was not the case, because the white deck was so weird. But, mm-hmm. And then really the question becomes, what do you do with the third deck? And does that have like splash damage of like, if the third deck has to be really weird, is it going to siphon cards off from elves or the white deck? And if that's the case, do you like mix up the other ones? So it's like this kind of like cyclical thing. I think most pools have been pretty straightforward for 2/3. And then the third one, you really have to like buckle down with your teammates and figure out what you're doing.
Your point about goblins is very true. Goblins is an obvious deck. A thing that I think our prep really helped inform. I think even it was our first pool, we dismissed goblins from jump because of that fact. But red-black ended up being what the third deck should have been in our mind. But it just wasn't goblins. It was like, well, we'll be red-black because you get to play Eclipse Boggart. But it's really sort of a red-black like mid-range control deck with like Burning Curiosities, drawing cards, and a bunch of removal and whatever. But I think we dismissed that because we're like, well, we don't have goblins. But it was like, yeah, we don't, but we do have a red-black deck. And I think that was something that at the end of the six practice pools that we did, I felt like, oh, I have a handle on the assumptions that I need to sort of like try and squash a little bit, because I think I would, you know, you'd look at red and be like, I'm dismissing red. Or you'd look at red and be like, oh, we have four Cinder Strikes, we have to play red. And then you're sitting there like banging your head against the wall trying to make a red deck look good with four Cinder Strikes, and it doesn't, and it feels bad to not play an entire color in your pool, but sometimes that's just what you're supposed to do. So I think the juice to squeeze for Lorwyn Eclipse Team Sealed in my mind is really giving tender care to that third deck. And I found the colorless cards that matter, figuring out the right home for those was a really like knife's edge thing for me. And I'm talking specifically about, I think, three cards, really just two. Chronicle of Victory, should you be so lucky to open it in your pool, the mythic that like you choose a creature type and anthems for that type, and you draw cards when you cast that type. But Gathering Stone, the 4-mana uncommon artifact, and Rooftop Percher, sort of the like, I feel like Rooftop Percher, not on my radar at all, showed up in a bunch of Pro Tour decks from draft. And then every time in all of my runs for the limited championship qualifier thing, everybody ran Rooftop Percher, and I was like, I think this card is just good.
It's just good.
It's yeah, great. It's why good. Is this card just good? But it is just good. But so realizing like, okay, don't leave Rooftop Perchers on the sidelines, but more importantly, who gets those cards? Like if you have Elves, Merfolk, and let's say Kithkin, because sometimes that'll happen. Elves, Merfolk, and Kithkin, your red isn't good, you don't play red, and you get lucky with three of the supported typal decks. Or Elves, Merfolk, Elementals, let's say. All three of those decks can play Gathering Stone. All three of those decks want Rooftop Percher. For my money, like, I think probably Elves is the one that wants creatures, like, wants the changeling more. Was sort of like, we never even talked about this, so I'm curious, I'll get a gut check from you guys what your thoughts about those two cards are. But for me, I was like, I would be inclined to give the Elves deck the Percher because it's a type that matters for that deck. And that deck really, you know, if you got Morkin's Eyes or your Eclipse Elf or your Morkin's Loyalist, like everything in the Elves deck really cares about Elves. We're like, Merfolk doesn't that much. And like, you're not going to do like, okay, now it's a 4/4 with your Deep Channel Duelist. Like that doesn't really matter that much. But Gathering Stone, I feel like also I would often not want to put in the Elves deck that you can, but I feel like something like a Kithkin deck really wants it. Elementals probably doesn't, because you're going to have card draw in other facets of that deck, whether it's your Kolrath Zealots or you're playing an Unexpected Assistance. But like figuring out where those cards went, I think was a really like fun little, I don't know, cherry on top puzzle for the end of building those pools.
Yeah, I think Percher specifically is pretty interesting because I actually kind of feel the opposite, but I think it depends. Like Percher in Elves is good, but the Elves deck I found is the deck that is most likely to like easily hit its creature type threshold. Just because like all the Elves at common are just pretty good. So like I didn't feel like you needed to put changelings in Elves that often. And then like it, like the Rooftop Percher in Merfolk is like a flying creature. If you're running things that work well with flyers, like Tributary Vaulter or something like a Thoughtweft Imbuer. But it really depends. Like sometimes the Elves decks do need the extra creature type, or like they just like want another top end threat. So it does, like you have to balance like what the card is actually doing in the deck. And like Gathering Stone in Elves also is like sometimes the Elf deck is just playing like stupid creatures and a couple removal spells and has no card advantage. And then you really want the Gathering Stone, the Elf.
Sure, deck. Sure. Yeah.
It depends on what I think generally those heuristics for those cards specifically are good, but it definitely depends on what the actual texture of the deck is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I agree with Sam on the Rooftop Percher being more of a kind of maybe an Emerfolk style deck. With Elves specifically, I think I found the Elves decks that I've had the most success with in Sealed have been really reliant on the recursion aspects of Elves, like the Morkin's Loyalist looping on Barry, like things like that. And then not a colorless card, but like another flex card that could go in multiple decks is like Graveshifter.
Yeah.
Right. So that's like, that's a black card. It can go in, but like, to me, that's an Elf card. Like I want that in the Elf deck to help be a creature and like continue to rebuy. And like, that's where I feel like Elves gets a lot of its card advantage and its grind in Sealed. Whereas like Gathering Stone, I think that's like, yeah, if I have like a Kithkin deck or something of that nature, like that deck, I feel like needs a little bit more help with the card advantage. I don't think I'm inclined to put Gathering Stone in a Merfolk heavy deck or elementals, whatever, anything that's blue. Cause you have other ways to get, you know, more mass kind of card draw.
Yeah, for sure. Talking about Graveshifter and Changeling specifically, I think is another cool little like the juice to squeeze. Like, where do your Prideful Feastlings go? And where do your, you know, Chitinous Grasplings go? And stuff like that.
We were passing the Sneaklings around the table yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, the Sneaklings were going around the table for sure. Did they end up? We had two. Did we end up playing them?
Charlie played one.
Played one.
Yeah, okay. I played one Sneakling. I had one on my board too. So I got both of them, but only one made the main deck.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the feisty spikelings of it all in just a little bit. So I think we can get to talking about our specific pool on the day of the tournament. And we got lucky. The run good started with we got one of the pre-regged pools of the day. And so that was really nice. Like, we didn't have to like go through and, you know, mark off all the cards and sort open the pack, sort the pool, mark it down. It was all done for us. And they were sorted in alphabetical order, in Wooburg order. And so the first card alphabetically in the set is Adept Water Shaper, the 2 and a white, 3/4 tapped. Other tapped creatures are indestructible. And that was there. And the second card alphabetically in the set is a Johnny. And I was, because I knew that because I was looking at the list and I was like, is a Johnny behind it? And Charlie just peeked and said, oh, yes, it is. So that was a good start. We got a really good white rare followed by a really good white mythic. Feeling good about it. And white, I think we'll save to talk about to the end because I think it's the most interesting of what happened. So Charlie, what deck did you end up playing and what can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so I ended up being the Elves player of the table, or of the team rather. And when we were going through and double checking the registration of the deck, there were a couple of standout cards. We had the champion and the Elf champion. We had Marilyn, the 2 blue-black and green for the 4/5 flyer that ETBs Elves and Fairies, exile 2 cards, and then you can cast them. You had
Morkin's Eyes, right?
Yeah, we had a Morkin's Eyes, and
the another? Green Sun Zenith also.
Yeah. The Morkin's Eyes, and then we had the Green Sun Zenith variant.
Celestial Reunion.
Yeah, that's right. That's the X green, search up a thing, and if you behold 2 of that type, you just get to put it in play instead of into your hand.
Right. So we had that to like tutor for the Marilyn or the champion. So
yeah.
Off the bat, and it looked like there were a fair number of like just Elves at common and 2. We didn't have any loyalists or any of that kind of stuff, but I quickly was like, I think there's an Elf deck. I think you have to play Marilyn if you open one in your pool. Like, that's one of the best cards, I think. So I was like, I want to look at Elves. And so I started with just the green and the black cards, because I don't think anyone else was really on thinking about green and black. So, you know, when you're starting to do the build, you have to divvy up something a little bit to let people start building those decks before you can start moving around. And so I just kind of grabbed all the green and black cards. And then Sam had identified a deck that he wanted. So I handed some cards to him, handed everything else to Ethan.
When you lay out that we had
kid
the Elf champion and we had Marilyn and we had Morkin's Eyes, it's embarrassing for me to say that I was like, I'm kind of fighting against us building Elves for a minute there, just because one of the things about our pool was it didn't have a ton of the hybrid. We just didn't have a lot of the uncommon or common like seeded cards for those top decks. Like, we didn't have an Eclipsed Elf. We didn't have Marrow Sky Swimmers for the Merfolk deck. We had 1 Deep Channel Duelist. But the Elves deck felt a little sparse. And the Marilyn, obviously, we were going to play. But because Maryland does care about elves and wizards, there was a point there where we were like, can we do? We had like double Glamour Gifter. Like, is there a way that we can do maybe green blue, sort of half elves, half fairies type deal? But ultimately, because black wasn't adding a ton to the party.
Right. And the problem was there wasn't like tons of interaction.
Right.
In between.
Right. You had a Bog Slither's Embrace and an Assert Perfection.
And Nameless Inversion.
Which is like, you would ideally. I think one of the things, here's another thing about Team Sealed that I think is true. There is just a pinch on removal and everyone's kind of got to spread it out. Like you'd like everyone to have five pieces of interaction. And one of the reasons that I think something like Sam's deck like played out so well, even though it looks kind of clunky, is when you can play or when you get a lot of like Imperial Oath Award winning kinds of cards, a lot of just like, yeah, this is like a junker common, but you kind of need to kill it too. I'm thinking about certainly Kulrath Zealot, Flamekin, Guildweaver, the 4/3 trampler that brings along a treasure. I think Stratosaur is in that camp, the 3/5 flyer. I think Sundappled Celebrant is in that camp, the 6-mana 5/6 vigilant convoke tree folk in white. Like these are not good air quotes cards, I guess, but they are cards where you're like, I can't ignore this. I need to like, use a piece of interaction on this or, I don't know, gang block it or something. But it is they are cards that demand answers that you can't really afford to use answers on because you also know that everyone's playing all the good rares that they open too. So there's a real, like, I don't know, balancing act there that I think bumps those cards up. And maybe they should just be bumped up in general for me, but I think certainly bumps them up in something like Team Sealed.
I think Wildvine Pummeler is another one in that camp.
Yes,
for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's, I've played a lot of Sealed. This is my third competitive Sealed event for Lore and Eclipse. And that was very true of Sealed. I think it's probably just a Sealed thing rather than a draft thing, because I think a lot of those cards, I mean, Kulrath Zealot is just like amazing. Like that's my favorite card in the set maybe. But it's like a lot of those cards are just like, they don't really have a home in draft. Like Pummeler has some synergies with like Tam and you can set it up with like, 2-drop hybrid, 3-drop, but most of the time you're just kind of ignoring that card. But like Sealed is when the decks are clunkier, sometimes like the colors where you have the best interaction just doesn't have good top end cards. And then you could just throw that in and steal some games that way.
Yeah, I think one thing that I've always had to remind myself over the years with Sealed is like the clunky, sometimes like 5- and 6-drop creatures that are really just stats, like they pull their weight in Sealed.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of like attrition of like, here's my bomb, I have my answers for it, whatever. And you're trying to get your, you know, nickel and dime all your 2-for-1s and everything. And kind of when the dust settles, it's like, yeah, but I got a 4/5.
Yeah.
Right? Like I got a 5-mana 4/5. And like, that's not a good card. Like no other text. Maybe it's reach, right? Like a red 5-mana 4/5.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's going to win me the game.
Yeah.
Right. This also cannot be ignored. Like, yes, it's nice to get my value, but also what are you going to do with this big dumb thing sitting here?
Right. Absolutely.
And that, all right. Sam, we've alluded to it. Your zealots, your elementals. What were you on yesterday? All right, Sam. Well, we've alluded to the Kulrath Zealot being your favorite card and the elementals of it all. So why don't you tell us about the deck that you played yesterday?
Yeah. So I was on blue, red elementals. Notably when we're laying things out elementals, we didn't have any Eclipse Flamekin. We didn't have any Twin Flame Travelers. We had very few rares in those colors. Like I think my final deck had Sanar, the blue, red hybrid guy, and Endblaze Epiphany, which is a good card, but no, you know, Sunderflux, no other elemental payoffs like that. But when I was looking at red specifically, and this happened in all of the Sealed builds we did as well, if there's like a couple Kulrath Zealots, which we had two, and a decent clip of red removal, I'm very, very happy to play a medium looking elementals midrange deck in this format when you have just the top end and can have like a decent curve and a clip of removal. Because that's something that I've had a decent amount of experience with in this format. Like in Toronto, when I played the Sealed event there, I did very well with it was green red elementals with just like Kulrath Zealot top end and decent red removal. In the Sealed event I played in Milwaukee a couple weeks ago, I think it was blue green actually, but it was like kind of a similar vibe of just mid range deck without a ton of rares, but a really good curve and a lot of capacity to pressure. That's basically what we built. When I like laid it, I took all the red cards and I just laid them out and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna build this deck. Like we could maybe talk about cannibalizing it if the other decks look like they need the red cards in a certain way. But we had like a Flame Braider, we had Flamekin Guildweavers, we had two Flaring Cinder, which is the blue red hybrid common. We had four Cinder Strikes, which I think I played three main deck because we also had Tweeze and a Feed the Flames, and you want like a diversity of removal spells.
And a Seer, right?
Yeah, and a seer. Yeah, we had a Seer as well. Yep. And then as we were like switching seats, Ethan got me to play two Stratosaurs, two of our four copies of Stratosaur, which ended up being quite good, especially because I played the Mirror four times in the day. And I was boarding up to three Stratosaurs in the Mirror a decent amount because five toughness is just hard for red decks to kill. And yeah, I was happy. I mean, I think most people would be not happy to play that deck. But I just have such good experiences playing these proactive mid-range elementals decks in these formats where you just go 2-drop, 3-drop, Flamekin Guildweaver, ramp out the Kolrath Zealot. You have to deal with my 6/5. I have like a pile of red removal spells to like clear the board, mess up your double blocks. And it played out very nicely like that. And I was very happy with it.
Yeah, I think both of your decks seemed underpowered to me. And I don't know if we mentioned this already, but you would think Team Sealed is probably like power level akin to Sealed. You really end up with decks that are often better than draft decks mm-hmm. in Team Sealed because of the just the amount of cards you get to see and how you get to curate the pools and the decks, or not the pools, but the decks themselves. And I feel like both of your decks, like, yeah, we were just talking about, like, you didn't have quite, like, maybe you would like a few more payoffs, or you would have liked a few more pieces of interaction. For elementals, you definitely would have liked, like, some more power, like,
yeah,
rares or uncommons or synergy or whatever. But both of your decks played out well.
Yeah.
Very consistently.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I feel like it's either you have way more rares than an average draft deck, just because that's what the pool opens, and maybe you have less support for at common and uncommon, or you just open like the perfect common uncommon curve of cards and you don't have the power, but you just have like a very consistent deck with a very consistent plan. So it could really go either way. I think in Team Sealed specifically, where you could either have like a really juiced version or like a really medium version, and there's ways to support that based on what cards you open.
Which brings us to the third deck, which you might think would be the easiest deck to build of them all, but it was truly the trickiest. Mm-hmm. The reason I would say that it was the easiest to build is that power is there. There's no bones about it. I had a ton of rares in this white deck. We had, as we mentioned, Adept Water Shaper, a Johnny, a Slumbering Walker, the 5-mana giant that can get back things with power 2 or less by removing counters from it. We had an Abigail, the Orzhov-Orzhov hybrid. We had a Champion of the Kraken as well. Like, the power of that deck, or that color, was there. The problem was, it didn't have a clear direction to go in. So mm-hmm. we had Champion of the Kraken, we had an Eclipsed Kithkin, so let's try and build a Kithkin deck. Just couldn't quite get there on types.
We had two green Kithkin in the entire pool.
Yeah, we had no Mismeadow Council.
So we also had a Champions of the Shoal, the Merfolk Champion. We had a Deep Channel Duelist. Great, let's put those white cards in a blue shell. We had, like, no Merfolk. We had, like,
six or seven.
One Gravel Gill Scoundrel, no Tributary Vaulters, could play a Shore Lurker, but, like, just kept coming up short on, like, what do you add to this white deck? That's why I was making the joke earlier about the feisty spikelings because we kept being like, all right, we're going to play Champion of the Kraken. If we play these feisty spikelings, that gets us to 8 Kithkin. Like, is that good enough? Okay, well, what if we do Merfolk? Same deal. Like, just kept coming up short because there was also, I'm very much a split the difference hybrid. I could do a half Kithkin, half Merfolk deck, whatever. I'm not opposed to that. Just couldn't quite get there with that. So what we ended up doing, I think, off the back of seeing an Explosive Prodigy in Sam's deck that we snagged, a Shimmer Creep that existed in our pool, double Wildvine Pummeler, two Foraging Wicker Maws, a Pooka's Eye, a Changeling Wayfinder to find lands, Prismatic Undercurrents, which probably shouldn't have been in the deck, but I put in there anyway. That's the 3 and a green enchantment that has Vivid search up basic lands as your Vivid payoff. But we had basically a mono white Vivid deck. is what we landed on. And the reason I'm sort of like second guessing it is my deck was easily the worst performing of the day. I think in terms of matches finished over our five rounds, I would say I went 1-3-1. I won one, lost three, and one I didn't need to finish because you guys had won before I finished, which is not a great record for the deck. And I think it just goes to show, like, when I'm saying your deck, Charlie, I think overperformed my expectations. Sam's deck for sure overperformed my expectations. And I think that makes me say I need to think about, for future Team Sealed events, putting a premium on consistency over power. And I feel like I know that intellectually now. I don't know quite why that is true, but that definitely was what felt true. And also felt true on the other side. Like, when I got rolled by my opponents, mm-hmm. he had a Kithkin deck, and yeah, he had power there, but what was really kind of rolling me was like Surly Farrier into 3-3 trample. Gathering Stone. And I was just like, I don't know if I'm equipped. I'm like, can you just chill so I can tick up my Ajani? No, you have trample. Like, that kind of consistency game over game is what's going to lead to wins in a tournament like this.
Mm-hmm. Going back to those like domino effects of building a sealed pool, you had the power. So maybe it's a little hard to like separate that out. But when you open pools and you don't have the power, like that, the next place you should be going is, how do I find that consistency?
Yeah.
And how do I, like, I have had great success in sealed building just kind of like medium looking curve out decks, right? Like being a little bit more aggressive, like I'm going to have some two drops, I'm going to have some three drops, where in my pool has that curve. And I think it's hard to separate that. And I don't know if our pool really could even have supported that based upon what we had. But also when you have that kind of power, you do kind of like, oh, shiny, right? Like, let me go to that. So I don't think the deck is that far off from where it probably should have been.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what we should have done. And maybe it's just a couple, maybe it's just truly a couple knobs. Like, did you need to splash Shimmer Creep? Did you need to splash Explosive Prodigy? Maybe then that trims things down a little bit.
Right.
But I do think that that's a really good point you're making, because that's a trap I think I fall into when I don't have a clear direction in sealed of like, I obviously can be blue black, but if you've got like, you know, five rares that are great, but they're in different colors, sometimes you just go like, well, I'm just going to jam them all together and fingers crossed that my mana works. And that's going to come back to, maybe it's not going to bite you in round one or round two, but it's going to bite you over the course of an 8-round event, you know?
Yeah.
And you really don't want to set yourself up to lose a round due to your own deck, you know? So I have some notes about the individual rounds, how things went, and maybe that'll jog y'all's memory, or if you remember them yourselves, we can do a little story time here.
Yeah.
The I feel like the most exciting thing for me came up in round one, where I had a rules interaction question that took three judges to try and noodle on. So I had a Mutable Explorer. That's the two and a green 1/1. There's another rare I didn't even mention I had, but the two and a green 1/1 that makes a Mutavault token. And had that in play. And I think just a board of a couple 1/1s from Ajani. And I had Abigail in my hand. Pretty unexciting to dump those counters on a 1/1. But hey, what happens if I animate my Mutavault and dump those counters?
Well, you also had a Pooka's Eye. So, you really wanted to play the Abigail because you wanted the black permanent to be able to start drawing off. So, like, it wasn't like, I'm just going to hang on to this Abigail. It's like, I need this on the battlefield.
Right. It was like the last card in my hand. And if I played it, Pooka's Eye would have been online to draw me cards. And so, yes, it was like, yeah, this isn't an ideal target for this, but I do need to deploy this turn. So I was like, oh, maybe I can get a little more juice from this. And instead of putting on a 1/1, put it on the Mutavault. And in my head, I was like, maybe, I don't even sure know how this works. Like, maybe it would just eternally be a 2/2. It'd stop being a land. So I asked a judge. The judge was definitely like, oh, I have no idea. Like, what are you talking about? So he went and talked to some judges, and they powwowed for a few minutes and then came back. So listeners, if you want a little puzzle, maybe pause, think about, well, how do those cards interact? And then you can unpause here, and I'll tell you that the ruling is that it will animate animate the Mutavault as a 2/2, play Abigail, dump the counters on it, attack in, it loses its ability, so you can attack in with it as a 2/2, but then end of turn, it will stop being a creature, and it will now be a land that cannot be animated and cannot even tap for mana anymore because of the Abigail text. So I did, in fact, not do that turn and just did it to a 1-1 instead. But that was fun. So that the sort of theme for the first half of our day was, and this was a 6-round event, was mirrors. Like yeah. We found ourselves Charlie in the elf mirror, me in a white mirror, whether it was against Merfolk or Kithkin or whatever, and Sam in the elementals mirror.
And there's no reason why any of those decks should have been in any of those seats. It's not like there's no strategy to like this deck belongs in seat B or this deck belongs. So it was just pure chance, but it was funny that we ended up having these mirrors.
Well, that brings me to something I think we should have probably touched on in just sure, a sealed overview, which is you sit in that order of ABC. And so there is the only strategy I think is around like the kind of person you put in seat B. And I think, again, like the three of us, I don't think it mattered. But I think generally you want to put either your clear best or your clear worst player in the middle, because if it's your clear best player, then that gives that person line of sight to both A and C's games. So A and C can ask best player what they think is right or whatever. And that player can have line of sight to both games independently. Or you put your worst player in the middle. Like I have my three buddies who came in, one of them, like, I don't think he would mind me saying this, but he just doesn't play that much Magic. Like, he knows how to play. He's drafted Lorwyn a couple times, happy to be along for the ride. That's your seat B player, so that the other two players who are confident can give input to the weaker player in the middle. Sometimes people think that, like, whatever deck you expect to finish first should go in seat B, so then that person's done and can give input. I was done early a lot, but that's because I was losing. And so then I could give my input to you guys. Anyway, so that was round one, was just mirror match for me against Kithkin. I went 2-0. Sam, you went 2-0. I think it wasn't blue-red in that mirror match. It was like a red-green changeling.
Yeah, deck. It was still elementals. Like they were playing, okay. I think they're based red-green for Prisma Basher, but it was the same idea. And then I know Charlie had the Elves mirror with the Marlin mirror.
I had like the true mirror round one in a base green black deck, splashing blue for Marlin. And they also had a Morkin's Eyes. And so like very similar rares and like powerful uncommons. And Marilyn's pretty stupid in the mirror, given that.
You exile your opponent's elves, and then that begets more exiling.
Right. So, like, it kind of. And then a really disgusting combination, too, is Morkin's Eyes and Marilyn. Because when you crack Morkin's Eyes and you get elves, Marilyn triggers off of elves ETB, not off of cast or anything like that. So, Morkin's Eyes can often be like mill 8, mill 10, whatever that is. And in game one, my opponent had a Marilyn, and they cracked Morkin's Eyes like mill 12. And I just like turned to Ethan. And I was like, I'm about to flip half my deck. I don't think I can
look over at Charlie's
6/2/2s like, plus a Marilyn plus whatever they get to cast for my. I think I scoop here, right? Like, don't show them anything.
Permission to concede early. Like, is that okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Without revealing information. Well, and I also, I bad on me. I like looked over, like I knew it was the mirror match, and then I looked over and your opponent had Marilyn. I was like, oh, it's the true Marilyn, true mirror match. And Charlie was like, yeah, but he doesn't know that. So shut up.
And then in game two, I got like a turn four Marilyn because I had the Lissalana Dignitary.
Oh yeah,
is that the?
And you did a cute thing to like ramp it out early because you had Iron Shield Elf. So
right,
you...
so I was able to discard an elf to allow that to tap for mana, and then on turn four I was able to cast Marilyn, which was great. Unfortunately, I passed the turn and they killed my Marilyn, so like it didn't do much there. And then we were like doing good and we were grinding and it was like fine. And they've like been holding on to a couple of cards for a while. They don't have a blue source. I'm like, their Marilyn is in their hand.
Yeah.
And so I cast Anti-Sentence against them. I'm like, I'm going to make them discard the Marilyn. And they show me the two cards, and it's Marilyn and the reanimation spell.
The Dowson, whatever.
Right.
Dose of Donglow.
And I have to make them discard.
And it has to be a permanent.
It has to be a permanent.
Five open mana. So it's like, and then they just got Marilyn on, and they could just blight onto something they didn't care about. And then I was like, all right. So, but I didn't lose.
That's right. Because
you two had finished
that's right.
before that game resolved.
Who knows so what would have happened?
I could have still figured out a way.
Round two, I played against someone who was actually in my little like testing Discord for Arena Champ. So it was nice to put a face to his name. And he had a really nice Merfolk deck, which like rolled me, but rolled me basically because of the 3/4. He had Adept Water Shaper and I had a bunch of like Wary Farmers. So I can't even attack into this 3/4 with my 3/3s. But also I've never seen, what's your least favorite card, Sam? I forget it. The 3/2 white Merfolk, the like, if it attacks,
yeah,
you tap a Merfolk, get a thing back.
I blocked its name out of my mind.
Yeah. Okay. So we won't speak its name, but he had two copies of that card, which was just incredible with Adept Water Shaper. Because I was even thinking, like, I had a window where I could have cast Keep Out on the Adept Water Shaper when it was tapped to then free up killing some other creatures of his. But with double of that Merfolk recursion thing, it was like, you can just get Adept Water Shaper back with that attack trigger. And before I can block or do damage or whatever, Adept Water Shaper comes back. And now your tap 3/2 is indestructible again. So it was a really hard spot for me to be in. I got pretty rolled there. That match was the one where we went to time, right, Sam?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was in the Elemental's Mirror again. And it was, we were in game three. We both had like kind of very similar decks. I remember there was a board state. We had like 10 minutes left, 5 minutes left, something like that. And I had a Kolrath Zealot. I was at 5 life. He was at 17. And he had 3 creatures on the board, but it was like, I think 1 point shy of actually killing me. So like he could have attacked, put me to 1. And I think I was ripping off the top of my library. And he basically didn't go for it. Which I don't think he had lethal. So it made sense. And then I was able to draw, I think, Sanar and some removal spells, and he had an Ashling that was like rummaging into more cards. So our boards got built out, and I finally drew a bunch of cards, had a bunch of red removal spells, and I landed a Hovel Hurler. He was at 17, and I had so I was able to, over the course of a couple turns, Hovel Hurler jump my Kolrath Zealot, deal him 7, do it again, deal him 7. So he was at 3. And the board was really wide. I had a Gristle Glutton, and both Charlie and Ethan were like behind me. And I was like, guys, I have to rip Tweez off the library. Like I have to rummage my Gristle Glutton, like to try to find Tweez to kill him. Cause this was like turn 2 or 3 of turns.
It's even better than that. So I want to set the stage just a little bit because I lost 0-2. So I had line of sight to both games. It was like pretty tight. Like you went to 3 games too. And you won your third game.
Yeah.
But at a certain point in the middle of your third game, Sam, I think you were stuck on 5 lands and you had mana cycled a Kolrath Zealot,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
And then like a couple turns later, you were like, I wish I hadn't done that because I don't know if I have enough threats left in the deck to win.
Yeah.
And at that point, my heart sank because I was like, oh man, I think we're going to lose then because like I lost, Charlie won, but I think we're going to lose the round. So yeah. So then you've got this amazing line of like the perfect number there at 17. We're launching Zealot twice and you're like tweezes left and you've got 5 cards left in your library. So like we're going to find it hopefully, but then you also have Gristle Glutton. And I think it's just the sort of thing where like, I'm not in the heat of the moment. I'm not locked in on tweez as my only out. So I see what you can do. So you've got Gristle Glutton, you've got Hovel Hurler, you've got Kolrath Zealot. You have Mountain in hand. You draw, or I think you had Mountain in hand. You like drew a land.
Drew
an island. And then you're like shuffling between them, like bluffing you have a decision or whatever. And I think Charlie and I were just both like, you just have lethal. Like you rummage with Glutton, put the counter on Hurler, and then remove the counter to launch the Zealot again. And
I like to think I would have found that on my own when I'm like activating the Glutton and be like, oh, I can Blight on the Hovel Hurler and kill them.
Yeah.
I was so locked in on Tweez because they were at 3 that I was like, I have to find this Tweez in like my 3 card library.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was fun. That was a fun little come from behind
win.
Mm-hmm. Especially after I was so like, oh no. Cause you asked me about cycling the Zealot, and I was like, yeah, I think that looks like based on the board state at the time, you did need the, you were choked on mana, you needed this, it, but then
he killed both my Stratosaurs and my top end was just like Hovel Hurler, two Zealots, and we cycled one. So I like had to find, if the Hovel Hurler was in the bottom five cards of my library, we definitely would have lost that because I needed the, I needed to actually kill them from 17.
So we're 2-0. And then round three, I played against a really good Merfolk deck, and a tricky game one where I made a massive punt. Should have just listened to my, my great teammate, Charlie here. I had, my opponent had like a Wanderbrine Trapper, the one mana 2/1 tapper, a Rooftop Percher, and I had no real ways to deal with the flyer, except I did actually, cause I had a, I had Abigailed onto a Wary Farmer. So I like, it's not like my flyer situation was terrible. And I think they had some 1/1 Merfolks as well. And I had a sequence of like, what am I going to do? And Charlie and I were sort of like communicating, but not saying too much and pointing at cards and like, I think I'll do this and then this. Charlie was like, yeah. And so I played a Johnny, minus a Johnny, pointed at the Rooftop Percher. And Charlie was like, no, don't you want to do the tapper? And I was like, well, it's too late because I did the thing. And I, but I was like, I think it's close. Like, I think I'm getting rid of the flyers good. Was not close at all. Like, that game was like 16 turns. And I eventually was able to get the win because they had like, you know, they're blue white, so their removal is enchantment. So they had cast Blossom Bind on my Adept Water Shaper, which was just like, okay, so now I have this perma, all my tapped creatures are indestructible.
You have Dolmen Gate.
Yeah. But it was hard to push through the tapper and all of the 1/1s because they had cast, I don't know the name of it, but the 7-mana Merfolk Tribal instant that bounces two things and makes 2/1/1. So they had, you know, tempoed me out a fair amount with that. But I was able to finally win that game. But I was like, that game would have been over like turn 8 instead of turn 16 if I had just killed the tapper and pushed through. So apologies, Charlie.
It's all right. And the reason that I was able to even have this conversation with Ethan was because I got steamrolled game one of that match.
Oh.
And my opponent like played this insane curve out of like Elf into Loyalist. Again, Elf mirror match.
It was again triple mirror match. Yeah.
Yeah. And they went Elf, like Loyalist, Formidable Speaker, find Doran. Mm-hmm. And then like was it like I couldn't do anything. So I got like completely steamrolled. I didn't talk about my round two match,
yeah, yeah.
But it was also a green black Elf Zest deck splashing white for Doran. And then my round three opponent was a green white. Oh, sorry, green black Elf deck splashing white for Doran. And both of those went to three games. I lost the first game. I did a little bit of sideboarding, brought in like the Death Touch trick. So I had like a little bit more interaction with Doran. I could block it and trade up with it. But I was able to win games 2 and 3 pretty fine. And Marilyn is very good in the Elf Mirror when the opponent does not have a Marilyn. So I was able to beat the Abzan versions pretty easily rounds 2 and 3.
Yeah. Sam, do you have any recollections? You won 2-0 this round.
I did,
too.
Yeah. I think my opponent mulliganed a lot, but yeah, I cruised in that round. I don't remember a lot.
Yeah. So we're sitting at 3-0. We're at the top of the standings. I mean, it's 22 teams. It's 6 rounds. Cut to top 4. 3-0 is nice. Like, you know, I think basically you have one loss to give, but it's nice to save that to the end. But you had even said this, Sam, before round 4 started. You're like, I'm a little worried. We're about to start facing the nutso decks.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's usually what happens at big sealed events is the first couple of rounds you're playing against whatever. But then when you're undefeated at like 4-0, you're going to start playing against people who would just have like 8 rares in their deck.
Well, and the other thing we haven't mentioned, it's only 22 teams. Like it was all crushers or crusher adjacent. Like I think the only like fumble I saw, I didn't play against like anybody who made misplays really. Like I didn't see any sort of like egregious errors. Sounds like you saw maybe someone, Sam, who maybe missed lethal or off by one. The only thing that stood out to me was you had an opponent who cast Sizzling Changeling and accidentally
their first play of the day.
They
misread it and they just like flipped the top card. They thought it was an Enter's ability. So we had to call the judge. It was fine. I mean, like when I was talking on Lord Limited Level Ups, like I made a couple misplays like that as well, or like mistakes like that. So it happens. So
yeah. So I just think that the caliber of play was quite high. Yeah. And then tacking on to that, then once you're 3-0, you're like, so people probably also have good cards too. It's not, you're not just off the back of good gameplay. And that is what we found. We played against actually the team that my the friends I traveled with, they played against that team round one, and they were like debriefing me about the Nutso Goblin deck that that team had. And yes, lo and behold, that team did have a Nutso Goblin deck. They did not, play an Elves deck in that, on that team. And that's because they had exactly what you want. They had Boggart Mischief. They had Grubb's Command. They had Grubb himself.
I looked over at Ethan's game and it was Boggart Mischief with a copy token on top of it. Uh-huh. And then he played Grubb and bought back the Boggart, like the Grubb's Command. I was like, okay.
And it was at that point that I was like, I really want to concede. It's a team event. Also my 2026 resolution, like no early concessions, but at that point I'm like, I'm just making, you know how when you're winning and you're like, I could just literally do anything and I'll still win.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It felt like I could literally make any decision here and I'm still going to lose. It doesn't matter. But I tried to stick it out, but yeah, played against a nuts, goblins deck. And Sam, you had an Elemental's Mirror again. Was this the Sunderflock?
Yeah. Opponent? Yeah. Their team was, I think they're from New York, like New York Crushers. I played the Elemental's Mirror, and it was the exact type of Elemental's Mirror I was hoping to dodge, which was just my deck, but better. So I actually took game one. I tempoed him out pretty effectively, because I just have so much red removal, and if I can get them on the back foot and they have to double block a Kolrath Zealot, it goes very well for me every time. So we had a game like that, and then games two and three involved him casting a Sunderflock and a Vibrance and a Deceit for both colors. Because he had like Flame Braider and the Manalith, which discounts Sunderflock. So yeah, I was very happy to take a game off of him. And I had no shot in the other ones.
My buddy played against that person in round one, and he won game one, and they had, you know, it's the first round of the day. It's an open entry tournament. So you don't know like the kind of person you're playing against. And I think the only card he like just drew like a bad part of his deck. Like played a Firdock Core as his first play of the game, and then something else inconsequential, my friend won, but then lost the next two games because he was like, oh no, you're good and this deck is good.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to me too.
And what happened for you?
I played the first non-mirror match. Mm-hmm. I guess we all did, but I played Merfolk, and I was in an incredibly commanding position of game two. I was already won game one, and game one I won by milling them out with Marilyn and Morkan's Eyes, which was great. Deal any damage to them. Mm-hmm. And then game two, I was like in a very commanding position of taking that one down. I was probably going to win in like a turn or two.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, didn't get to finish that one.
This round, I think, was the round, like, I don't think I made many misplays, but this round, I think, upon reflection, was the one where I was like, this was bad. I was very conscious of when I like my default play on turn three when I had the option, because I had two copies of this in my deck, so it came up a lot, but was to play Wary Farmer on three when I could, because that just getting it out early meant every subsequent turn I'm going to get the Surveil bonus. This specific hand, I only had three mana. I had tons of stuff to do on three. Like I think I also had Adept Water Shaper. I had a Changing Wayfinder. But more importantly, I had the Champion of the Clacken in my hand. But I was stuck on three. I opted to play Wary Farmer because I was like, well, if I miss a land, I'll still be able to do something with it. Mm-hmm. But I think I really should have guaranteed just play the Wayfinder, get that fourth land, and open up being able to play Champion on turn four. I think my opponent's deck was nuts enough that sequencing wasn't going to matter. That was the game that you looked over and there was the copy. That was the Boggart Mischief copy with the Grubb getting back Grubb's Command. Like, I'm not winning that game no matter what. But upon reflection, like, especially missing that fourth land, I was like, oh, this was stupid. I should have just get the Wayfinder, guarantee the land, flash in the 4/5. Because I might have been able to mitigate a little bit. Like, okay, I can eat a couple tokens in combat.
I never play around Champion of the Clacken. Yeah.
There was also, what did he have? Oh, the other thing that happened, and I was so conscious of this because I had seen Boggart Mischief already. I was prepared for that in a sense because I had both Pyrrhic Strike in the deck and Keep Out. So I had main deck ways to deal with the enchantments, and I was very conscious of that. But then he also had the Dawnhand Dissident turn one of match of game two. And I was like, I know I'm going to need to deal with this at some point down the line. And Keep Out was the removal spell I had. And so I did use the Keep Out on it. And then later on, the Boggart Mischief showed up. And I was like, wouldn't it have been great if I could kill it? Like, there's no way to know. Like, you got to answer the threats you have to answer. But it was just a very, ooh, if I had waited or what, or if I had sequenced this slightly differently, maybe something would have happened. But that definitely was the biggest misplay, I think, was not playing the Wayfinder on three. So we're 3-1. And I think it's about now we should maybe sprinkle in. Oh, what's up, Charlie?
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, we're 3-1, but there were 3-3-0s going into that round.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other 3-0 team also lost.
Uh-huh.
That was a not in our match. So at this point, there's only one 4-0 team.
Uh-huh.
And we are top of the tiebreakers for 3-1.
Yeah.
So we're in a good position.
We're in a good position.
Yeah.
I mean, we probably have to win out.
Right.
Is what we were thinking. You have to win the next two rounds to make top four. But we should probably sprinkle in what is happening on the outside world at this point, which is that there's a massive storm in Minneapolis looming. A massive storm that, I feel like was everyone being like, oh, Minneapolis knows how to handle snow, but still, it's going to get anywhere from the forecast for 7 inches to 2 feet or what's going to happen. So much so that when I landed on Thursday night, on Friday morning, I was seriously considering just changing my flight to fly out Friday night and miss the tournament. That was an annoying sequence of things where I was trying to get ahead of it. Delta was like, no, that's going to cost you $500. I was like, well, that doesn't seem worth it. And then 3 hours later, they were like, and your flight's canceled. So what do you want to do? I'm like, okay, cool. I tried to do this a few hours ago and now your website is broken because everybody's trying to change their flight. Anyway, Sam, you drove a car with 4 other people.
Yeah, so I drove 2 friends up. I had another friend fly in, and then his flight got canceled. So he was going to catch a ride back to Chicago with me, which is a 6-hour drive. And it was very, very clear that our options were either drive back Saturday night or we're stuck there till Monday. And my other friends that I was driving, they had one of my friends, had a work thing that they're traveling for on Monday out of Chicago. So we really needed to get back for that. They looked into renting a car of their own to drive back just themselves, cause they went 0-2 drop in the tournament. And, they,
after printing shirts with your podcast name and face on them,
and not my face. It was just their faces.
Okay.
Yeah, they had matching shirts with their face, but my
podcast. So they're 0-2 drop. We're 3-0.
Yeah.
Nice.
And they'd been trash talking me for months at this point. but they couldn't find a rental car for less than $1,000 for the 6-hour drive. So it was. I was not hoping we were going to lose. I was playing my best, but it would have been, if we did lose the next round, it would be very convenient because we could get out of Minneapolis back to Chicago and everything would work out well if that happened. And it would be very messy if we made day 2.
Yeah, you were in just a really tough spot.
Yeah.
You've got 4 people depending on you who are let's get out. Then you've got me and Charlie depending on you. It's a really bad situation for you to be in.
Yeah.
And so round 5 comes. We play against, as I said, Greg from System Magic, Sam Eilenfeldt, Rookie of the Year from back in the day. Just pleasant but crusher team on that side of the table. And we lost. I played against, as I mentioned, Greg's Nuts Kithkin deck rolled me in 2 games. And I forget what happened. Oh, you played against Sam on Goblins.
He was Grixis.
Oh, okay.
Stuff. It was Grixis Elemental.
He had Ashling's Command too.
Yeah, he had Ashling's Command. There was some Goblin stuff in it, but I don't think it was I would not call it a Goblin. I think it's similar to that first practice pool
that we did.
It was red, black. It was
those colors, that. Yeah, yeah.
But just, a great player. And I got stuck on lands. I had to use my I don't know the name, the Green Sun Zenith to get the 3-1 that Surveil to try to keep fight. It was I put myself in a really awkward position.
I had a commanding lead. I had a very funny game against, I think his name was Matt, where I was in a commanding position game 1 with, I think he was at 7. I had a 4-3 and a 6-5. I was attacking. I was at I think I was at 18. He had 5 creatures. And I had some blockers. I put him to 7. I had a Stratosaur for close to lethal the next turn. He goes attack all with 5 creatures. And I had 2 blockers. So I just blocked. I was like, I don't know what's going to happen. And he mirror forms his deep channel duelist to deal me exactly 18. It's what? He's like, yeah, I've done that a couple times today.
Yeah, that was nasty. I looked over. He was like, this is 18. He's like, yeah, I've done this. This is like six deep channel duelists all giving +6/+6 or whatever. Yeah.
And then I ended up, because I knew, like, we lost the match, and I was like, okay, I need to drive my friends home. I want to play this last match, even though we're dead. And I ended up taking my match down with zero cards in my library from Sanar, because my deck has a really good matchup against the Merfolk deck, just because I have so many, I have four Cinder Strikes. So
yeah,
I won with zero cards in my library, jumping the Kolrath Zealot again. But yeah, it was just for fun at that point, because
right.
I need to get out of there.
So we bid Sam adieu. Charlie and I were trying to figure out what do we do for the last round. And we were like, well, like, it's a team event. Can we just be like, Sam concedes his match, but we can play R2. And if we win R2, then our team wins the round. And that was our plan. And we ran into the first thing was like, the judge was like, the player has to be here to concede the match. And we're like, well, okay, then I guess we can't do it. And then he was like, well, I guess we'll make an exception. You guys can still play if you want. But the other team was like, you realize this is a win and in, right? And we're like, what?
Because we're at 3-2. And it's a cut to top 4, not to top 8.
Yeah. Right. And because of how things played out, the top table drew.
Uh-huh.
So they were able to guarantee their winning in. And then there were three teams, I guess, that were 3-1-1.
Yes.
And so table 2 was 2 of them playing. And so the winner of that was going to be 4-1-1 uh-huh. and make top 8. And the other would be 3-2-1.
Uh-huh.
And then we played another 3-1-1 team.
Uh-huh.
So again, with a win, they were guaranteed. But with a win at 4-2,
we would have
been in with the highest
the
tiebreakers. Because yeah. I believe our two losses were the top two tables that drew.
Yeah, correct.
So if we had won that, I think we would have, it was a win and in for us too.
So yeah, so like they told us we can play the match, but then it was like, but then to what end? So let's say we win, then we make it, we are the fourth team to go to top 4 to draft on day 2. But we can't draft because we only have 2 players. So like we could have done it and then auto conceded and all walked away with whatever, $100. But that didn't seem like the right thing to do. So we just scooped in Andrew Ellen Bogan's team to the top 4, which it was a messy, like it was not my favorite situation. It was like from a day of competitive Magic feeling fine. I was like, oh yeah, this is the part of the competitive Magic of it all that I really don't like.
If it makes you feel better, I know that the top 4 is also a little messy today, because I know one of the top teams in the top 4, someone I know from elsewhere, is like, they are Minnesota locals and they couldn't get to the venue today, so they dropped and a different team got in.
They said specifically yesterday that they would not move up a team.
They explicitly said that to us.
But they said, I mean, one of the teams, I was talking to him online, he said he dropped because they literally could not get to the venue.
Yeah.
Because they're not at the hotel.
And that's because of the snow. So it is a good thing that Sam drove back when he did.
we're glad you're safe.
We're glad you're safe.
That's number one.
I got in a cozy 11:30 p.m., slept in my own bed. Yeah.
And Charlie and I are hunkering down for an extra day. We're going to go back to the venue after we're done recording here. We're hopefully going to fire a cube. We fired an 8-person Lorwyn Eclipse draft last night that Charlie took down with a scrappy, red white aggro deck. So we got some Magic in store, and then you're on a train tomorrow morning back to Chicago.
Yeah, I just decided to abandon the flights. Yeah. And so I was able to book like an $80 like refundable Amtrak ticket on Monday. So like, whatever happened. And then my flight tonight also got canceled, so I'm just hopping on a train tomorrow back to Chicago.
And I'm hopefully on the first flight out tomorrow morning to Pittsburgh, so that will be good. And I just moved it actually right before we started recording. I was supposed to be on the last flight tomorrow night, and then a couple spots opened up on the first flight out, and I was like, well, let's try and get on that, because like worst case scenario is if it gets delayed, then I'll still get out at some point. But you know, the last flight out on a weather delay weekend is always a little dicey, because sometimes they're just like, that gets kicked. So much happier to be on the first flight tomorrow. Guys, this is very fun. I'm sorry, like the outside elements notwithstanding, this is a team I would re-rack in a heartbeat.
Yeah, easily.
Absolutely.
And for anyone out there who is considering, ooh, maybe I get two people, get two strangers, but like obviously get two buddies, get two people you know you're going to have good vibes with. Mm-hmm. I think like skill level or experience notwithstanding, you're just going to have a fun time because it's just so fun to be able to like share in what is very often a solo venture, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
All right, guys. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen. We're going to wrap things up here. You can find all of our content on our website. That's lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, our episode backlogs, Patreon, obviously. All of that is at lordsoflimited.com. You can reach out to us at our email, lordsoflimited@gmail.com, if you have any questions or comments about the show. Check out Sam's podcast, Rough Drafts, and his streams at twitch.tv/SamP. Or is, wait, Sam, is there something else?
Underscore MTG.
Sam P underscore MTG. Thank you. Charlie.
I mean, you can follow me. Strix Familiar with a Y. I'm a little bit of a retired content creator.
As Charlie said yesterday, as people like, love your guys' content. Charlie was like, I should have printed a shirt that said, I don't have a podcast.
But I did get to say it to a few people.
But instead you were repping the LOL merch, which is also on our website if you want it. That's it. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.